Good evening, and this is Ms. G, and I am bringing you Left Hanging here tonight at 104.3 Juneau, Alaska. But first, the weather. Tonight we have periods of rain, lows around 40, with light winds becoming north-southeast, 10 to 15 miles per hour in the evening. On Wednesday, periods of rain diminishing in the afternoon, highs around 48, with southeast wind 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, rain, lows around 40, southeast wind 10 miles per hour. On Thursday, it's going to be rain, is likely, highs around 47 with southeast wind 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers, lows around 37 with light winds. On Friday, mostly cloudy, highs around 47. Friday night and Saturday, it's going to be mostly cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 39, highs around 47. Saturday night and Sunday, rain likely with lows around 38, highs around 47. Sunday night through Monday night, mostly cloudy, chance of rain showers, lows around 43, highs around 46. And on Tuesday, rain is likely with highs around 48. Okay, so there you have it, our weather for the rest of the week. And as I said, this is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Left Hanging here tonight at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And in honor of the Nobel Peace Prize winners, all women this year, I'm very excited about that. I'm reading a story of a Nobel Peace Prize winner herself for literature, Ms. Toni Morrison, the only short story that was ever published by her, called Recitative. I'll be right back with the story by Toni Morrison. Please stay tuned, Left Hanging with Ms. G here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. This is Ms. G. I am bringing you Left Hanging here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And tonight's story is by the Nobel Peace Prize winner for literature, Ms. Toni Morrison. She won in 1993 for her short story, Recitative. My mother danced all night at Roberta's and was sick. That's why I was taken to St. Bonnie's. People want to put their arms around you when you tell them you were in a shelter, but it really wasn't bad. No big long room with 100 beds like Bellevue. There were four to a room, and when Roberta and me came, there was a shortage of state kids, so we were the only ones assigned to a room 406 and could go from bed to bed if we wanted to. And we wanted to, too. We'd change beds every night, and for the whole 4 months we were there, we never picked one out as our own permanent bed. It didn't start out that way. The minute I walked in and the big bozo introduced us, I got sick to my stomach. It was one thing to be taken out of your own bed early in the morning. It was something else to be stuck in a strange place with a girl from a whole other race. And Mary, that's my mother, she was right. Every now and then she would stop dancing long enough to tell me something important. And one of the things she said was that they never washed their hair and they smelled funny. Roberta sure did. Smell funny, I mean. So when the big bozo, nobody ever called Mrs. Itkin, just like nobody ever said St. Bonaventure, when she said, Twyla, this is Roberta, Roberta, this is Twyla, make each other welcome. I said, my mother won't like you putting me in here. Good, said Bozo. Maybe then she'll come and take you home. How's that for mean? If Roberta had laughed, I would have killed her. But she didn't. She just walked over to the window and stood with her back to us. Turn around, said the bozo. Don't be rude. Now, Twyla, Roberta, when you hear a loud buzzer, that's the call for dinner. Come down to the first floor. Any fights and no moving. And then, just to make sure we knew what we would be missing, the Wizard of Oz. Roberta must have thought I meant that my mother would be mad about my being put in the shelter, not about rooming with her. Because as soon as Bozo left, she came over to me and said, Is your mother sick too? No, I said. She just likes to dance all night. Oh, she nodded her head. And I liked the way she understood things so fast. So for the moment, it didn't matter that we looked like salt and pepper standing there. And that's what the other kids called us sometimes. We were 8 years old and got F's all the time. Me, because I couldn't remember what I read or what the teacher said. And Roberta, because she couldn't read at all and didn't even listen to the teacher. She wasn't good at anything except jacks, at which she was a killer. Pow, scoop, pow, scoop, pow, scoop. We didn't like each other all that much at first, but nobody else wanted to play with us because we weren't real orphans with beautiful dead parents in the sky. We were dumped. Even the New York City Puerto Ricans and the upstate Indians ignored us. All kinds of kids were in there, black ones, white ones, even two Koreans. The food was good, though. At least I thought so. Roberta hated it and left whole pieces of things on her plate. Spam, Salisbury steak, even Jell-O with fruit cocktail in it. And she didn't care if I ate what she wouldn't. Mary's idea of supper was popcorn and a can of Yoo-Hoo. Hot mashed potatoes and two Winnies was like Thanksgiving for me. It really wasn't bad, St. Bonnie's. The big girls on the second floor pushed us around now and then, but that was all. They wore lipstick and eyebrow pencil and wobbled their knees while they watched TV. 15, 16, even some of them were. They were put-out girls, scared runaways, most of them. Poor little girls who fought their uncles off but looked tough to us and mean. God, did they look mean. The staff tried to keep them separate from the younger children, but sometimes they caught us watching them in the orchard where they played radios and danced with each other. They'd light out after us and pull our hair or twist our arms. We were scared of them, Roberta and me. But neither of us wanted the other one to know it. So we got a good list of dirty names we could shout back when we ran from them through the orchard. I used to dream a lot, and almost always the orchard was there. 2 acres, 4 maybe, of these little apple trees. Hundreds of them. Empty and crooked like beggar women when I first came up to St. Bonnie's, but flat with flowers when I left. I don't know why I dreamt about that orchard so much. Nothing really happened there. Nothing all that important, I mean. Just the big girls dancing and playing the radio. Roberta and me watching. Maggie fell down there once. The kitchen woman with legs like parentheses. And the big girls laughed at her. We would have helped her up, I know, but we were scared of those girls with lipstick and eyebrow pencil. Maggie couldn't talk. The kids said she had her tongue cut out, but I think she was just born that way, mute. She was old and sandy-colored, and she worked in the kitchen. I don't know if she was nice or not. I just remember her legs like parentheses and how she rocked when she walked. She worked from early in the morning till 2 o'clock, and if she was late, if she had too much cleaning and didn't get out till 2:15 or so, she'd cut through the orchard so she wouldn't miss her bus and have to wait another hour. She wore this really stupid little hat, a kid's hat with ear flaps, and she wasn't much taller than we were. A little awful, really awful little hat. Even for a mute, it was dumb dressing like a kid and never saying anything at all. But what about if somebody tries to kill her? I used to wonder about that. Or what if she wants to cry? Can she cry? Sure, Roberta says. But just tears, no sounds come out. She can't scream? Nope, nothing. Can she hear? I guess. Let's call her, I said, and we did. Dummy, dummy. She never turned her head. Bow legs. Nothing. She just rocked on, the chin straps of her baby boy hat swaying from side to side. I think we were wrong. I think she could hear and didn't let on. And it shames me even now to think there was somebody in there, after all, who heard us call her those names and couldn't tell on us. We got along all right, Roberta and me. Changed beds every night, got F's in civics and communication skills in gym. The bozo was disappointed in us, she said. Out of 130 of us state cases, 90 were under 12. Almost all were real orphans with beautiful dead parents in the sky. We were the only ones dumped and the only ones with S in 3 classes, including gym. So we got along, what with her leaving whole pieces of things on her plate and being nice about not asking questions. I think it was the day before Maggie fell down that we found out our mothers were coming to visit us on the same Sunday. We had been at the shelter 28 days, Roberta 28 and a half, And this was their first visit with us. Our mothers would come at 10 o'clock in time for chapel, then lunch with us in the teacher's lounge. I thought if my dancing mother met her sick mother, it might be good for her. And Roberta thought her sick mother would get a big bang out of a dancing one. We got excited about it and curled each other's hair. After breakfast, we sat on the bed watching the road from the window. Roberta's socks were still wet. She washed them the night before and put them on the radiator to dry. They hadn't, but she put them on anyway because their tops were so pretty, scalloped and pink. Each of us had a purple construction paper basket that we had made in craft class. Mine had a yellow crayon rabbit on it. Roberta's had eggs with wiggly lines of color. Inside were cellophane grass and just the jelly beans because I'd eaten the two marshmallow eggs they gave us. The big bozo came herself to get us. Smiling, she told us we looked very nice and to come downstairs. We were so surprised by the smile we'd never seen before, neither of us moved. "Don't you want to see your mommies?" I stood up first and spilled the jelly beans all over the floor. Bozo's smile disappeared while we scrambled to get the candy up off the floor and put it back in the grass. She escorted us downstairs to the first floor, where the other girls were lining up to file into the chapel. A bunch of grown-ups stood to one side, viewers mostly. The old biddies who wanted servants and the gays who wanted company looking for children they might want to adopt. Once in a while, a grandmother. Almost never anybody young or anybody whose face wouldn't scare you in the night. Because if any of the real orphans had young relatives, they wouldn't be real orphans. I saw Mary right away. She had on those green slacks I hated and hated even more now because didn't she know she was going to chapel? And that fur jacket with the pocket lining so ripped she had to pull to get her hands out of them. But her face was pretty like always. And she smiled and waved like she was the little girl looking for her mother, not me. I walked slowly, trying not to drop the jelly beans and hoping the paper handle would hold. I had to use my last chiclet because by the time I finished cutting everything out, all the Elmer's was gone. I am left-handed, and the scissors never worked for me. It didn't matter, though. I might just as well have chewed the gum. Mary dropped to her knees and grabbed me, mashing the basket, the jelly beans, and the grass into her ratty fur jacket. Twyla, baby, Twyla, baby. I could have killed her. Already I heard the big girls in the orchard the next time saying, Twyla, baby. But I couldn't stay mad at Mary while she was smiling and hugging me and smelling of Lady Esther dusting powder. I wanted to stay buried in her fur all day. To tell the truth, I forgot about Roberta. Mary and I got in line for the traipse into chapel, and I was feeling proud because she looked so beautiful even in those ugly green slacks that made her behind stick out. A pretty mother on earth is better than a beautiful dead one in the sky, even if she did leave you all alone to go dancing. I felt a tap on my shoulder, turned, and saw Roberta smiling. I smiled back, but not too much, lest somebody think this visit was the biggest thing that ever happened in my life. Then Roberta said, Mother, I want you to meet my roommate, Twyla, and that's Twyla's mother. I looked up. It seemed for miles. She was big, bigger than any man, and on her chest was the biggest cross I'd ever seen. I swear it was 6 inches long each way, and in the crook of her arm was the biggest Bible ever made. Mary, simple-minded as ever, grinned and tried to yank her hand out of the pocket with the raggedy lining to shake hands, I guess. Roberta's mother looked down at me and then looked down at Mary, too. She didn't say anything, just grabbed Roberta with her Bible-free hand and stepped out of line, walking quickly to the rear of it. Mary was still grinning because she's not too swift when it comes to what's really going on. Then this light bulb goes off in her head and she says, Zap! Really loud. And that's almost in the chapel now. Organ music whining. The Bonnie Angels singing sweetly. Everybody in the world turned around to look, and Mary would have kept it up, kept calling names if I hadn't squeezed her hand as hard as I could. That helped a little, but she still twitched and crossed and uncrossed her legs all through service, even groaned a couple of times. Why did I think she would come here and act right? Slacks, no hat like the grandmothers and viewers and groaning all the while. When we stood for him, she kept her mouth shut.
wouldn't even look at the words on the page. She actually reached in her purse for a mirror to check her lipstick. All I could think of was that she really needed to be killed. The sermon lasted a year, and I knew the real orphans were looking smug again. We were supposed to have lunch in the teacher's lounge, but Mary didn't bring anything, so we picked fir and cellophane grass off the mashed jelly beans and ate them. I could have killed her. I sneaked a look at Roberta. Her mother had brought chicken legs and ham sandwiches and oranges and a whole box of chocolate-covered grams. Roberta drank milk from the thermos while her mother read the Bible to her. Things are not right. The wrong food is always with the wrong people. Maybe that's why I got into waitress work later, to match up the right people with the right food. Roberta just let those chicken legs sit there. But she did bring a stack of grams up to me later when the visit was over. I think she was sorry that her mother would not shake my mother's hand. And I liked that. And I liked the fact that she didn't say a word about Mary groaning all the way through the service and not bringing any lunch. Roberta left in May, when the apple trees were heavy and white. On her last day, we went to the orchard to watch the big girls smoke and dance by the radio. It didn't matter that they said, "Twyla, baby." We sat on the ground and breathed. Lady Esther. Apple blossoms. I still go soft when I smell one or the other. Roberta was going home. The big cross and the big Bible was coming to get her, and she seemed sort of glad and sort of not. I thought I would die in that room of four beds without her, and I knew Bozo had plans to move some other dumped kid in there with me. Roberta promised to write every day, which was really sweet of her because she couldn't read a lick, so how could she write anybody? I would have drawn pictures and sent them to her, but she never gave me her address. Little by little, she faded. Her wet socks with the pink scallop tops and her big, serious-looking eyes, and that's all I could catch when I tried to bring her to mind. I was working behind the counter at the Howard Johnson's on the thruway just before the Kingston exit. Not a bad job. Kind of a long ride from Newburgh. But okay, once I got there. Mine was the second night shift, 11 to 7. Very light until a greyhound checked in for breakfast and around 6:30. At that hour, the sun was all the way clear of the hills behind the restaurant. The place looked better at night, more like a shelter. But I loved it when the sun broke in. Even if it did show all the cracks in the vinyl and the stucco floor, it looked dirty no matter what the mop boy did. It was August and a bus crowd was just unloading. They would stand around a long while, going to the John and looking at gifts and junk for sale machines, reluctant to sit down so soon, even to eat. I was trying to fill the coffee pots and get them all situated on the electric burners when I saw her. She was sitting in a booth smoking a cigarette with two guys smothered in head and facial hair. Her own hair was so big and wild I could hardly see her face. But the eyes, I would know them anywhere. She had on a powder blue halter and shorts outfit and earrings the size of bracelets. Talk about lipstick and eyebrow pencil. She made the big girls look like nuns. I couldn't get off the counter until 7 o'clock, but I kept watching the booth in case they got up to leave before that. My replacement was on time for a change. So I counted and stacked my receipts as fast as I could and signed off. I walked over to the booth, smiling and wondering if she would remember me, or even if she wanted to remember me. Maybe she didn't want to be reminded of St. Bonnie's or to have anybody know she was ever there. I know I never talked about it to anybody. I put my hands in my apron pockets and leaned against the back of the booth facing them. Roberta? Roberta Fisk? She looked up. Yeah? Twyla. She squinted for a second and then said, "Wow. Remember me?" "Sure. Hey, wow." "It's been a while," I said, and gave a smile to the two hairy guys. "Yeah. Wow. You work here?" "Yeah," I said. "I live in Newburgh." "Newburgh? No kidding." She laughed, then a private laugh that included the guys, but only the guys, and they laughed with her. What could I do but laugh, too, and wonder why I was standing there with my knees showing out from under that uniform? Without looking, I could see the blue and white triangle on my head, my hair shapeless in a net, my ankles thick in white Oxfords. Nothing could have been less sheer than my stockings. There was this silence that came down right after I left. A silence it was her turn to fill up. With introductions, maybe, to her boyfriends or an invitation to sit down and have a Coke. Instead, she lit a cigarette off the one she just finished and said, "We're on our way to the coast. He's got an appointment with Hendrix." She gestured casually toward the boy next to her. "Hendrix? Fantastic," I said. "Really fantastic. What's she doing now?" Roberta coughed on her cigarette and the two guys rolled their eyes up at the ceiling. "Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix. He's only the biggest... Oh, wow. Forget it." I was dismissed without anyone saying goodbye, so I thought I would do it for her. "How's your mother?" I asked. A grin cracked her whole face. She swallowed. "Fine," she said. "How's yours?" "Pretty as a picture," I said and turned away. The backs of my knees were damp. Howard Johnson's really was a dump in the sunlight. James is as comfortable as a house slipper. He liked my cooking and I liked his big, loud family. They have lived in Newburgh all their lives and talk about it the way people do who have always known a home. His grandmother is a port swinger, older than his father, and when they talk about streets and avenues and buildings, they call them by names they no longer have. They still call the A&P Rico's because it stands on property once a mom-and-pop store owned by Mr. Rico. And then they call the new community college Town Hall because it once was. My mother-in-law puts up jelly and cucumbers and buys butter wrapped in cloth from a dairy. James and his father talk about fishing and baseball, and I can see them all together on the Hudson in a raggedy skiff. Half the population of Newburgh is on welfare now, but to my husband's family it was still some upstate paradise of a time long past. A time of ice houses and vegetable wagons, coal furnaces and children weeding gardens. When our son was born, my mother-in-law gave me the crib blanket that had been hers. But the town they remembered had changed. Something quick was in the air. Magnificent old houses, so ruined they had become shelter for squatters and rentriers, were bought and renovated. Smart IBM people moved out of their suburbs back into the city and put shutters and herb gardens in their backyards. A brochure came in the mail announcing the opening of a food emporium. Gourmet food, it said, and listed items the rich IBM crowd would want. It was located in a new mall at the edge of town, and I drove out to shop there one day just to see. It was late in June, after the tulips were gone and the Queen Elizabeth roses were open everywhere. I railed my cart along the aisle, tossing in smoked oysters and Robert's sauce and things I knew would sit in my cupboard for years. Only when I found some Klondike ice cream bars did I feel less guilty about spending James's fireman's salary so foolishly. My father-in-law ate them with the same gusto little Joseph did. Waiting in the checkout line, I heard a voice say, "Twyla." The classical music piped over the aisles had affected me, and the woman leaning toward me was dressed to kill. Diamonds on her hand, a smart white summer dress. "I'm Mrs. Benson," I said. "Ho-ho, the big bozo," she sang. For a split second, I didn't know what she was talking about. She had a bunch of asparagus and two cartons of fancy water. "Roberta!" "Right. For heaven's sake, Roberta." "You look great," she said. "So do you." "Where are you? Here in Newburgh?" "Yes, over in Annandale." I was opening my mouth to say more when the cashier called my attention to her empty counter. "Meet you outside." Roberta pointed her finger and went into the express aisle. I placed the groceries and kept myself from glancing around to check Roberta's progress. I remembered Howard Johnson's and looking for a chance to speak only to be greeted with a stingy wow. But she was waiting for me, and her huge hair was sleek now, smooth around a small, nicely shaped head. Shoes, dress, everything lovely and summery and rich. I was dying to know what happened to her. How she got from Jimi Hendrix to Annandale, a neighborhood full of doctors and IBM executives. Easy, I thought. Everything is so easy for them. They think they own the world. "How long," I asked her, "how long have you been here?" "A year. I got married to a man who lives here. And you're married too, right? Benson, you said?" "Yeah, James Benson."
"And is he nice?"
"Oh, is he nice? Well, is he?" Roberta's eyes were steady as though she really meant the question and wanted an answer. "He's wonderful, Roberta, wonderful." "So you're happy?"
"Very."
"That's good," she said and nodded her head. I always hoped you'd be happy. Any kids? I know you have kids. One, a boy. How about you?
Four.
Four? She laughed. Stepkids. He's a widower.
Oh.
Got a minute? Let's have a coffee. I thought about the Klondikes melting and the inconvenience of going all the way to my car and putting the bags in the trunk. Served me right for buying all that stuff I didn't need. Roberta was ahead of me. Put them in my car. It's right here. And then I saw the dark blue limousine.
You married a Chinaman?
No, she laughed. He's the driver.
Oh, my. The big bozo could see you now.
We both giggled. Really giggled. Suddenly, in just a pulse beat, 20 years disappeared and all of it came rushing back. The big girls, whom we called Gar Girls, Roberta's misheard word for the evil stone face as described in a civics class. They are dancing in the orchard, the ploppy mashed potatoes, the double weenies, the spam with pineapple. We went into the coffee shop, holding on to one another, and I'd hardly think why we were so glad to see each other this time, and not before. Once, 12 years ago, we passed like strangers, a black girl and a white girl meeting at a Howard Johnson's on the road and having nothing to say. One in a blue and white triangle waitress hat, the other on her way to see Hendrix. Now we were behaving like sisters separated for much too long. Those 4 short months were nothing in time. Maybe it was the thing itself. Just being there, together. 2 little girls who knew what nobody else in the world knew. How not to ask questions. How to believe what had to be believed. There was politeness in that reluctance, and generosity as well. Is your mother sick too? No, she dances all night. Oh, and an understanding nod. We sat in a booth by the window and fell into recollection, like veterans. Did you ever learn to read? What? She picked up the menus. Special of the day, cream of corn soup, entrees, 2 dots, and a wriggly line. Quiche. Chef salad, scallops. I was laughing and applauding when the waitress came up. Remember the Easter baskets and how we tried to introduce them? Your mother with that cross like 2 telephone poles, and yours with those tight slacks. We laughed so loudly, heads turned and made the laughter harder to suppress. What happened to the Jimi Hendrix date? Roberta made a blowout sound with her lips. When he died, I thought about you.
Oh, you heard about him finally.
Finally. Come on, I was a small-town country waitress. And I was a small-town country dropout. God, were we wild. I still don't know how I got out of there alive. But you did. I did. I really did. Now I'm Mrs. Kenneth Norton. Sounds like a mouthful.
It is.
Servants and all? Roberta held up 2 fingers.
Ow! What does he do?
Computers and stuff. What do I know? I don't remember a hell of a lot from those days, but Lord, St. Bonnie's is as clear as daylight. Remember Maggie? The day she fell down and those Gar girls laughed at her? Roberta looked up from her salad and stared at me.
Maggie didn't fall, she said.
Yes, she did. You remember? No, Twyla, they knocked her down. Those girls pushed her down and tore her clothes in the orchard.
I don't... That's not what happened.
Sure it is. In the orchard. Remember how scared we were?
Wait a minute. I don't remember any of that.
And Bozo was fired?
You're crazy. She was there when I left. You left before me.
I went back. You weren't there when they fired Bozo.
What?
Twice. Once for a year when I was about 10. Another for 2 months when I was 14. That's when I ran away.
You ran away from St. Bonnie's?
I had to.
What do you want?
Me dancing in that orchard?
Are you sure about Maggie?
Of course I'm sure. You've blocked it, Twyla. It happened. Those girls had behavior problems, you know.
Didn't they, though?
But why can't I remember the Maggie thing?
Believe me, it happened, and we were there.
Who did you room with when you went back?
I asked her as if I would know her. The Maggie thing was troubling me.
Creeps. They tickled themselves in the night. My ears were itching, and I wanted to go home suddenly. This was all very well, but she couldn't just comb her hair, wash her face, pretend everything was hunky-dory. After the Howard Johnson snub and no apology, nothing.
Were you on dope or what that time at Howard Johnson's?
I tried to make my voice sound friendlier than I felt.
Maybe a little. I never did drugs much.
Why?
I don't know. You acted sort of like you didn't want to know me then.
Oh, Twyla, you know how it was in those days. Black, white, you know, everything was.
But I didn't know. I thought it was just the opposite. Busloads of blacks and whites came to Howard Johnson's together. They roamed together then. Students, musicians, lovers, protesters. You got to see everything at Howard Johnson's, and blacks were very friendly with whites in those days. But sitting there with nothing on my plate but two hard tomato wedges, wondering about the melting Klondikes, it seemed childish remembering the slight. We went to her car, and with the help of the driver, got my stuff into my station wagon. You've been listening to me read Recitative by Toni Morrison. This has been Left Hanging and Ms. G here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Enjoy now. Letters on the Air are already in progress. Good night.